Hi everyone, Russ here. In this episode, you're going to be meeting our final two main cast PCs. I hope that by the end of this episode, you'll feel like you know our PCs and that you might even have a favorite. Thank you so much for listening, and now, welcome to Backstory Episode 2, Training and Treatment. Hi everyone, welcome to this character backstory episode. Today I'm sitting down with Ollie. So we're going to start off a little bit talking with Ollie about who you are as a person.
Cool.
So, Ollie,
yeah.
If you could, where do you fall in the LGBTQ plus community?
Yeah, so I'm non-binary. I use they, them pronouns. And I'm bisexual, question mark? It's a big fluctuating mess of just like, I like everyone, question mark? We'll figure it out. So that's me.
Hey, questioning is a part of the community, so it's okay.
It's all good.
So what is your experience with D&D?
Wow, I wasn't prepared for these answers. I have like admired D&D from afar for like many years, but I didn't actually start playing until about a year ago. I really have only played in like two campaigns, and both of them didn't go very far, and I played in like a few one shots here and there and stuff, but this is like one of my first like very serious campaigns that we're gonna see out to the end, so that's cool.
All right, this is probably one of my last questions, just because I feel like the first two questions covered a good amount.
Mm-hmm.
What does your character look like?
Oh, okay.
What does Vayu look like?
So, Vayu is 5'10". They're pretty tall. They're bright blue. That's the most noticeable thing. They have, like, white, short, fluffy hair. They wear, like, pink and orange, like, monk clothes. Pretty loose-fitting. Just kind of chill. They have these crystals that grow out from, like, their shoulder down to their elbow. These, like, clear, kind of iridescent-y crystals. And they have dark blue cloud tattoos, like, all over their torso. Yeah, I think that's all that's important. Oh, they have eyes that are, like, completely whited out. Sometimes they change color, but, like, pretty subtly. They'll just go, like, gray or, like, yellow, but, like, it's pretty low-key. Yeah, I think that's it.
And what's Vayu's class?
They are a monk, elemental monk, if that's important.
Not yet, because you're still level one.
I'm still level one. But that'll happen.
And last name's Hidari, correct?
Yes.
Am I pronouncing that right?
Vayu.
All right, cool.
Hidari.
All right, then. So I think we're going to begin.
Sick.
This session takes place about 4 months before we start the campaign. It's early winter. It's the month of Snowdeep, which in this world is basically our January. It's early morning, and this is a question for you about what time does Vayu wake up? Is Vayu like a late sleeper?
Vayu, if they have something to do, they wake up pretty early in the morning, but if they have nothing, they would sleep till noon. They generally don't because their family doesn't let them, but if they could, they would.
All right.
So like 7 or 8 in the a.m.
All right. So you wake up at 8 a.m. because you have big plans for the day. You know that later today, you're going to the orphanage to help Evie and Ezra take the kids to the market. As you're waking up, you can smell breakfast being made by Freya. and you can hear Amala and Freya talking downstairs. Where is your little friend?
Oh, Fayu Jr.? He's, like, on the windowsill. I'm assuming there's a window in my room. There is now, I decided. He's just, like, chilling on the windowsill. Fayu would probably get up and, like, feed him a little, like, seeds or something as soon as they wake up.
So you get up and you feed Fayu Jr. a little bit. And
you can just
outside,
call him Junior for short.
Junior. you see outside that it looks like it's going to be quite a cold day. It is early winter, so it's getting pretty chilly. But looking around your room, you can see your bed. You can see your desk and everything and all your other sort of other adornments in your room, I guess. So you head downstairs. You get ready for your day, and then you head downstairs, I guess.
Sick.
So you head downstairs, and you can see your mother is at the stove, Freya. She is an elf. You know that she's actually around, like, 300 years old or so, but to you, she looks like probably a 50-year-old or so in human years. She's cooking eggs up for you and your sister, Amala, who is sitting at the table sort of joking around about her day and what she's looking forward to. She's only 12, so she does go to the school in Vergon, and she studies there. You can see that there's also an extra place that is set for Sachi, but as you know, Sachi isn't there. So what do you do as you walk in onto the scene?
I probably just, like, go past them all and, like, ruffle her hair a little. She's just adorable. And I go up to Freya. Is there anything I need to help you with?
Oh, if you would like to get some water for everyone, or whatever they'd like to drink, you should ask your sister what she wants to drink.
Mala? Water? What do you want?
Milk!
Fine.
Thanks!
cool, so then I go over to, like, the cabinet where there's cups, open it, take some out, I get water for me and Freya, and then I get milk for Amala, and I get water too for her, and I'm like, you need to stop drinking milk, there's other things out here, you should stay hydrated too.
So there's, like, this little breakfast scene. Freya brings over breakfast for you both and sets it out on the table. Once again, that seat is still there with no one sitting at it. Amala does run over to a cabinet and grab, like, a pile of bird seed and just toss it onto a spot on the table.
Oh.
And Junior just flies and goes nuts.
Yes.
For it. And after breakfast, you are ready to start your day.
Sick.
So you're heading to the orphanage. The orphanage is this three-story building that's been built up from the ground along with the rest of the town. It's chaos, honestly. There are 24 children of various ages who live here, and there's only about three people working there. One of them being Evie Cornell, who you know is basically the person in charge. She is a elf. She's not as old as your mom. She's probably around 25, 30 years old-ish. But she's very, very kind. You've spent a lot of time in this place, and you've seen how she acts with the kids, and she's just the most gentle person. She has dark brown skin and black hair that falls around her face, and incredibly, incredibly warm eyes, and she's always smiling and happy. And walking through the front door, you can see that Evie is already ready and ready to go. And standing with her is Ezra. Ezra is a half-elf. He has very much the boy next door sort of vibes. He's very muscularly toned. He wears blue tunic and black trousers. And he has this big smile plastered across his face. And he looks at you and says, "Ready to go, Vayu?"
Yeah, I'm good. I'm not late, am I? I'm on time, yeah?
You're about a minute or two late, but it's fine.
That's nothing. It's fine. Alright, I'm ready to go.
Evie sort of gives you a nod. There's a little bit of disappointment in her eyes, but, like,
yeah, that's fair.
She just gives you a nod, and then you guys sort of gather the little bundle of children that you're going with. You guys have about 8 children who are coming with you. It's some of the younger ones. They all seem to be around ages from, like, 3 to 8-ish around. Most of the older kids are either at school or out hanging with friends. This isn't a mandatory trip. It's just a, hey, let's take the kids and go to the market sort of thing. You see that Ezra immediately picks up a kid who has, like, sort of attached themselves to him. It's a young elf boy named Peter.
Aww.
Peter is quite young and very wriggly normally, but in Ezra's arms, he's very, very calm, and he just sort of holds himself there. You've had a lot of experience with these kids after the past year or so in Ragon, but Peter and Ezra are just the most adorable picture as you guys are walking out.
That's so wholesome.
So Ezra looks at you and says, so what's the plan for the day?
Well, I just kind of here for the adventure. Make sure none of these little squirts run away. That's number one priority, of course. I have to pick up a few things for Freya at the market, but that's no big deal, so I'm just along for the ride.
And then I'm assuming you're going to the temple afterwards, right?
Yeah, as per usual.
So you guys get to the market, and the market in Ragon is this expansive stretch of space that's filled with a bunch of different stalls. You know that Ragon is one of the only places in the world that doesn't have much poverty, just because of the fact that you guys are all provided for by the 5 governments. You guys all receive stipends and stuff while you live there. So people who come here to sell must get permission from the government, but they know that they'll make a killing here, because anything they sell will most likely be bought up at some point by someone here.
Mm-hmm.
So there are stalls that have almost anything you can think of. There's like 1 or 2 stalls that are selling magic items. There are a bunch that are selling clothes, stones, crafted items, and it's just this beautiful expanse of just busyness. Honestly, it's so busy and a little bit of chaos, but it's great. You see that in front of you is Evie walking with all of the children. She mm-hmm. has about 7 of them with her, whereas Ezra just has the one.
And I'm just chilling.
And you have 0.
Yeah, that's about right.
But there's one child who keeps looking at you. She is a small dragonborn girl.
Aww.
She looks to be quite young. She has light blue scales, and she just occasionally glances back at you. And as she's doing this, Ezra sort of looks over and says, "Your little nervous friend seems to want to talk to you." You know that this girl's name is Rhea. She's a dragonborn girl. She's an orphan. Her mother passed away and her father went on the mission. She always seems to just be looking at you. She never really talks to you, and when you've tried to talk to her before, she seems nervous, but she keeps glancing back at you.
Aww. All right, so I give her like a little wave. I kind of like try to motion her over, but I'm assuming she probably wouldn't come.
She sort of looks up at Evie, and you notice Evie very quickly like looks down and meets her eyes and like gives her a slight nod, and for the first time ever, Rhea lets go of Evie's hand and walks over to you.
Aww.
And she holds up her hand and says, "Can I hold your hand?"
"Yeah, of course." And I just, like, put my hand out and take her little hand. Oh, that's so cute.
She reaches up to hold your hand. You know that Rhea is probably around 3 or 4-ish,
aww,
which in Dragonborn years is a little older, like 6 or 7.
Okay.
And she's always been really shy, but in this moment she's shown a little bit of bravery that you've never expected before. And she holds your hand and says, "I like you. You're nice.
You're pretty cool yourself." And I kind of like nudge Ezra and I'm like, "Check it out, a kid, trust me."
Ezra sees this and just sort of like, snickers under his breath. Rhea looks up at you and says, "Thanks for holding my hand."
"You're welcome, Squirt. Do you want to go anywhere?"
"I saw some cool stones over there. Can we go look at them?"
"Oh, yes, definitely." And I kind of, like, lead her over to whatever stand is nearby.
Mm-hmm. So there's, like, a dwarven man who's selling these stones that have all these different colors on them. They aren't, like, gemstones or anything, but they seem to be multicolored stones that could be made into, like, jewelry or put into weapons, that sort of stuff. They're very much ornamental sort of things.
That's
you
the
do
jam.
See a few of them have been, like, carved into shapes. Like, there is a jade elephant that is sitting there. But the thing that seems to have caught Rhea's attention is this blue stone that's sitting on the table. It has streaks of black through it, and it is quite, it's not small, but it, you know, it would fit, like, probably in her palm. And she looks at it and says, "Look, it's the same color as you and me."
"Yeah, it sure is." "So, do I have money on me?"
"You do have money. You have a couple gold pieces on you. You have whatever starting money you have. In the campaign."
Well,
do you not know how much starting money you have?
I might not. Hang on. Let me look. Hang on.
You better keep this part in, because Ollie.
This is the part where everyone knows that I don't know how to play D&D. Just kidding.
You've actually never played D&D before? D&D, what is that?
D&D, never heard of her. Well, okay, so I didn't write it down.
You don't have any starting money. Good job. I just pulled up your character sheet.
I don't know how I didn't write it down.
I will scroll through the PDF and figure out how much money you have.
Thanks.
5 gold pieces.
I have 5 gold. Okay.
Okay.
Back at it again.
So, back at it again with some white fans. You have 5 gold on you. And you can see that this stone is probably just like 1 gold piece, or at least that's what, like, the little sign says that's sitting in front of it.
Oh, sick.
And the man looks at you and says, "Looking to buy that stone, are you?"
Yeah.
Turquoise. Very, very rare.
Sure. Okay. Yeah, I'd love it. And I just, like, take out a gold piece and, like, hand it to him.
Alright, you hand the gold piece to him. He, like, immediately pockets it, and you can see this look of just, like, excitement on his face.
Good for him.
And he hands you the piece of turquoise.
Cool. Alright, I like, hand it out to Rhea, and I'm like, do you want me to make you a bracelet or something out of this?
A bracelet?
Yeah.
That would be awesome.
Alright.
Like the one that you have?
Yes, definitely. We can have friendship bracelets.
Does that mean I'm your friend?
Yes, of course.
I don't have a lot of friends.
Well, I'm going to be your best friend.
And Rhea hugs your leg when you say that.
I just, like, pat her head a little bit. Kind of try to hug back.
She sort of looks up and says, "Wait, we're falling behind. We have to go catch up."
All right. And I pocket the stone and I grab her hand and we kind of speed walk back to the group.
All right. So you sort of spend the rest of the day at the market. Rhea stays by your side the entire time. She seems to be enamored with you. Not like in love, but like with a sense of like she just adores you. You end up having lunch and everything with the group, and then you escort them all back to the orphanage. There's nothing really big that happens besides that moment with Rhea. Rhea does ask you for a hug when you go to drop her off.
Oh, I try to pick her up and I like give her a hug.
Oh,
like
you
that.
You can totally pick her up. She's so tiny. When you pick her up, she squeals.
Aww.
In like excitement. So, once you're done with all of that, where do you go next?
I probably just head immediately. I'm assuming it's like afternoon at this point.
Yeah, it's afternoon. You've had lunch and everything.
Cool.
It's been a good while with these people, with these kids.
So I probably just head right to the temple There's no real reason for me to, like, do anything else, really, so I'd probably just head immediately there.
Alright, so you head to the temple. The temple is this enormous white building made of raw marble, and it's double doors that lead into this room that's split into many different wings. You know that each of these wings have to do with the different gods of creation, and there are also side wings that have to do with the secondary gods, the sort of combinations between them. And in the very center of the room is an enormous statue dedicated to the god known as the Pantheon, which is the fusion of all four gods of creation, and just basically the creator of everything. And you go straight past this area. You know that where you normally go to train is not in here, it's in the back. It's in this sort of training field that they have outside the temple. Within the temple walls, but in an open air area. And as you reach there, you actually see a halfling sitting there. He's a small man. He has brown skin that has been touched by the sun, with very poofy hair and dark freckles across his cheek. He's just sitting on the ground with his eyes closed. What do you do?
Okay. So I take out my my staff, and I just kind of like nudge his knee with it, and I'm like, hey, I'm here. It probably pisses him off.
He doesn't open an eye, he just shakes his head and says, I was meditating, Vayu.
Yeah.
Would you like to join me?
Well, I guess if I have to, but...
As your teacher, you have to.
Fine. And I just kind of sit down next to him begrudgingly. I'm not very happy about this part. And I just kind of like sit there, but I don't really put like an effort into meditating. I just kind of like sit there with my legs crossed and just like stare at the wall.
He sits there for a little while. And then, you know, you could at least try to meditate.
But I've tried so many times, and it just doesn't work. You know this about me.
Honestly, I sometimes wonder what you learned in that monastery.
Oh, they've tried. They've tried a million times, but I'm just not very good at the whole focusing thing.
Fine then. We will move on to your martial training. Oh. And he opens his eyes and stands up.
All right, I just immediately get up and I'm like, yeah, let's go. I'm ready. Party time.
So, Ollie, do you have dice at the ready?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, he looks at you and says... He sort of takes a few steps back from you and gets into a readied position and looks you in the eyes and says, just as last time, I want you to try and hit me.
Okay.
So I'm going to have you roll initiative for me.
Initiative?
Yep.
Okay. That's 9.
That's a 9, okay.
First roll.
So, you watch as Tulio sort of gets down and, like, steps into a readied position, and he just sort of watches you.
Okay.
So, it's your turn. What would you like to do?
Alright, I guess I'll roll to hit him with my staff. Just like a conch.
So, Tulio, on his turn, used the dodge action, so you're going to have disadvantage on this roll.
Darn. Okay. cool. I rolled a 19, so can't use that. of course. Great. That is 14.
All right. So you take a step forward and you swing your staff down towards Tulio, aiming for like his shoulder. But he merely just spins around it and you have not struck him.
Great. Cool. Love it. This is awesome.
He then bounces back and forth on his feet and says, "Not doing well, are you, Vayu?"
Guess that meditating would have helped me, but whatever.
All right, go ahead and swing at him again.
Okay.
If you'd like to.
Yes. Do I still have disadvantage?
Yes, he's still using dodge.
Darn. Okay. I keep getting 19s, but then I can't use them. That's a 16.
It's a 16. Yeah. Okay. So this time you swing at him, and it's less that you hit him and more that he catches your bow staff and then pushes it away from him. Faster.
Okay. All right. Okay, so... I guess I'll try to, like, give him, like, a roundhouse kick this time.
All right. Go ahead. Okay. He didn't take the dodge action that time, because I didn't describe him taking it, so
don't have
disadvantage on that roll. Yes.
Okay, let me roll again. That's a 21?
That's a 21. Okay, so this time, you swing your staff, or you don't use your staff, you spin around on the ball of your foot,
mm-hmm.
and you kick him. This is right after he's tossed your staff away, so you sort of use that momentum against him, and you kick him right in the shin.
Good.
Roll damage for me.
All right. That is 7.
7? Okay. So you, like, hit him in the shoulder, and he sort of grunts about it. And he says, "Finally playing real, are we? Okay, I guess it's my turn then." After saying that, Tulio sort of gets down real low and then jumps forward to punch you.
Great.
That is a natural 20 to hit.
Oof!
This might actually knock you out.
Oh, no.
Just because of how little health you have.
I don't have any. Oh, God. I'm scared.
We're going to find out right now. So that is a 3, which doubled is a 6.
Oh, thank God. His
bonus is a 9.
No!
I think you're knocked out.
I'm very knocked out.
Okay. So... So Tulio runs forward and punches you straight in the kidney.
Oof.
And you just double over and collapse to the ground. I'm going to say you don't fall unconscious because this is training. But Tulio looks at you and goes, "Ooh, I did not mean to hit you that hard."
Yeah, sure.
I'm very sorry about that. Let me help you. And he sort of reaches down to help pick you up.
No, I'm definitely being dramatic, and I just, like, lay limp, and I'm like, "Let me die here. This is the end."
Tulio then looks at you and says, "I can leave you here. I do have other matters to attend to."
No, I'm sorry. Help me up.
"I must say that I do think this is going to be the end of our training for the day. I don't know how well you can fight," he says as you're doubled over, like, clutching your stomach. Like,
yeah, that's fair. That's valid.
"How about we try some meditation to close off?"
Fine. If you say so.
So he sits down with you again. And this time, it's a little different when you tried meditating before. When you tried meditating earlier, you were kind of all over the place. You were excited about the orphanage. You were excited about Rhea sort of finally reaching out to you, as she's been trying to do for a while. But now, there's just a little tinge of pain, but there's not much else. You can feel the wind around you in this place, and you can hear the sound of rain from off the coast over the ocean, and you're just sitting there. It's quiet. Do you actually meditate, or does this state still not enough for you?
No, I would say definitely now that they've been, like, beaten into submission a little bit, they definitely go into it with, like, a little bit of a, like, meditation, whatever attitude at first, but then they just kind of, like, feel the wind around them and just kind of, like, settle. They probably, like, watch something blowing in the wind and just kind of, like, zone out.
Alright, so you zone out, you enter this state of meditation, and it's quiet for a long time, and then Tulio sort of shakes your shoulder. Fayu, are you okay?
What? Yeah, no, I'm good.
Looking around, you can see that it's actually nighttime now.
Oh, that was fast. I should probably go home.
Are you sure you're okay?
No, yeah, I'm good. You beat me really hard there, so I was just trying to heal. It's all good.
It's alright, it's just that these sort of meditation time periods are normal for everyone but you. I don't think I've ever seen you that calm before.
Well, there's a first time for everything, I guess. And I kind of, like, thumbs up him, like, hey, I did a good job, right?
He gives you a nod and sort of says, well, I will see you tomorrow, then.
That sounds good.
Have a good night.
You too. And I get up. I probably still hurt a lot, but I accept it. And go home.
Alright, so you head back home. And you come over to your house, and you know that you live in a pretty standard house for Ragan. You know that when the nation started building the city, they made almost every house the same, just because you're all here for the same reason. And you can smell meat being cooked from the inside, and you can tell that your mother is almost finished dinner, or might be finished making dinner. You don't know, but dinner is being made.
Mm-hmm.
Fayu Jr. just flies in through an open window.
Sounds about right.
Doesn't even wait for you. Knows Savage. That there's bird seed ready for him.
Savage bird.
He's ready to go. And I'm assuming you go inside.
Yes.
Alright. It's very similar to the scene that happened this morning with your mom cooking and Amala sitting at the table just sort of talking about her day and what she learned in school. You know that Amala has sort of been gaining a little bit of a tendency towards fire. Mm-hmm. You aren't sure if that tendency through her hand movements is from clerical magic or druidic magic or wizarding magic, but she has some sort of pull towards fire. And she's talking about her day at school and how she accidentally set her test on fire and it was a whole thing.
I'm so proud of her. That's awesome.
And she's just basically talking to fill the space. You do notice a moment where she sort of pauses while she's talking about it. I'm gonna sort of slip into the character a bit. Mom, you should have seen it. I really think that she would have been proud. And you can see that Amala shoots a glance towards the empty seat at the table where Sachi would have sat. And you do hear a sort of pause in Freya's stirring of the pots and pans in there.
Yeah, and I like reach out across the table for her hand. I'm assuming her hands are like on the table, so I just mm-hmm. kind of grab yeah. it. And I'm just like, yeah, she would have. And I just kind of smile at her.
She looks at you and says, you can't even make fire.
Now that's very rude of you to just call me out like that.
She just smiles, and you can hear that Freya's just laughing in the kitchen. She's just losing it over that. And you have a nice dinner. There's still that sort of ache of not having someone with you, but it's nice. It's happy. And as you're sort of cleaning up from dinner and making sure everything's put away, Freya looks at you and says, "Are you planning on going out and training again tonight?"
Yeah, once it gets completely dark, I think I'm going to go head out to a field. I'm assuming there's just, like, some kind of field
adjacent.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, so, yeah, I'm going to go head out to the usual field, hang around for a little bit.
When you come back, just try not to trip again. You wake us up sometimes, and it's...
I'm sorry. I'll be as quiet as possible.
Thank you. And Freya comes over and gives you a kiss on the forehead.
Aww.
And then heads upstairs.
Cool.
So night falls around you, and you leave the house. As you do, you begin to feel something. As you're walking out of the house, walking through this dark night, you can see that there are guards walking around and there's some people who are still milling about, but there's something else there. You can hear something on the edges of your hearing, I guess. Words are weird. You can hear singing. And this is a singing that you've been familiar with for a long time, because it's not a person that's singing. This is something you've had since you were just a baby, something that sort of inspired you to become a monk, that helped shape you as an elemental monk. You can hear the singing of lightning, because you know that there's a rainstorm coming, and with it, the lightning. And so you walk through the town heading towards this field, and you can hear it getting louder and louder around you. This tune that lightning sings isn't so much a beautiful tune or like harmonious, it's chaotic in a way that's incredible. You can hear points where this voice seems to split and branch and become others, and there's long periods of silence. And you've heard this song for forever. Sometimes the voice is different, but it always sings. And you head out to the field, and when you reach there, you begin to train. What does your training normally consist of?
I would say, well, it depends on the day, definitely. Like, today, it's definitely a little more slow-paced because they still hurt from the the gut punch of earlier. They definitely just kind of, like, they take their staff and just go through some, like, some forms and movements, but very slowly, just to kind of get down, like, the nitty-gritty of it. Like, some martial arts forms that they've learned from different monks and stuff. They probably do a few without their weapon too, just kind of like very slowly going through the movements to like really feel it, I guess, if that makes sense.
So you take your bow staff and you sort of just slowly move it, tracing the paths that you were taught by Sachi and the other monks in Ferolin. You sort of follow your training and focus on it. And you sort of reflect on the entire day and what you've been through. There's nothing that really sticks out to you besides that conversation with Rhea of seeing her and how that went. That was the first thing today that's been sort of out of the norm for you. Basically, what you've done today is pretty standard for your time in Ragon. And you train and listen to the singing of lightning as the skies open up and rain begins to pour. And I think that's the final scene that we see. The image of Vayu moving their staff as rain falls. and lightning and thunder flash. Hi everyone, I'm sitting here with Ben, one of the cast members of the campaign, and I have a few questions for you before we start this backstory episode. So my first question is, where do you fall into the LGBTQ plus spectrum?
I fall roughly. So I guess the best place to put me would be the B. I do identify as bisexual. However, I don't really feel that that always encompasses me. So I tend to just use the word, queer. It just, that just seems a little bit more fitting. It's more overarching. So yeah.
All right. And so my next question for you is, what is your experience with D&D?
I have played in a couple of other campaigns. The first one I ever played, my friend Jess, he started my senior year, and I played a character. His name was Azazel. He was a sorcerer, and I thought that it was just going to be some, like, ridiculous time. I don't know. I didn't really think much of it. I just thought that, hey, it'll be cool hanging out with my friends, doing some stuff, performing, whatever. And then it turned out to be a lot more than that. It became a time that, like, I could see my friends because we were all always so busy, that we could actually, like, hang out and do things together. And, shortly after we started the first campaign, was when I got sick. So having my friends around and playing this game actually kind of helped ground me. It helped me, like, it gave me something to look forward to while I was, like, in the hospital or when I was getting treatment or anything else. It was a lot of help, and it was a really great motivator. So I was really grateful for D&D, and for my friend Jess.
I actually sat in on one of Jess's campaigns before, and yeah, I've sort of seen how he does things, and that's actually how I met you. I met you through Sam, because Sam told me that Jess was running a campaign, and I sat in on it. So I'm glad that D&D could have that sort of effect on you.
Yeah.
So moving on, who are you playing and what class are they?
I am playing Elsie. He is a tiefling rogue.
And what do they look like?
So he's a tiefling, like I said. He's about, like, 6'4", 6'5". He has purple skin. He has horns, like, similar to, not ram's horns, because they're shorter and they don't curl, but yeah, just, he has horns. He has silver eyes. He always dresses very well. He has a cape, which Sam added, and I really liked, so I kept it. Good job, Sam. I'm not a very big descriptor, so I think that's about it. I don't know.
That's all right.
Is there anything else?
Everyone, check out the art on Twitter and Instagram.
Yeah, Sam will have a better picture than I will have a description. I'm sorry.
All right. So with that, I think it's time for us to get started. So this day in your life takes place about 3 months before our campaign actually starts. It's late winter. Winters in Ragan are quite cold. You guys are towards the southern end of the Kartaj Empire, right along the coast, so it gets quite cold around here. And knowing this and knowing that occasionally snows and everything, people are sure to bundle up. And so it is early morning, my friend. So, Elsie, I need you to roll me a d8.
Two.
Okay. Make sure to add that to your score, subtract it to your score, wherever it falls. Okay, so, Elsie, the first thing that happens in the morning is that your mother is already in your room. Isabella is a woman in her mid-50s. She is elven. She has darker skin and long black hair that she puts up into a bun. She's bright and peppy, but her eyes betray how tired she always is. She smells of lavender from the flowers that she picks to the east of the village. She's kind and loving. And as she walks in, she immediately begins getting the room ready. She begins moving things in the room, trying to make it look more neat. And then she comes over to you and puts her hand on you and says, "Darling, come on. Get up. We have to get to the temple. You have your treatment today."
This early?
Yes, in the morning, that way you can come back and rest. And then your friends can come visit you.
Fine, but give me a minute, let me get dressed.
Okay, come on. And she goes and heads over, leaves the room and heads downstairs to the kitchen. And you can hear her moving things around in there. And as she does, you hear the door open again, very slightly. And stepping into your room is Veronica, your sister. She has brown hair that she cuts close on the sides and keeps long on top. She wears this bright green dress and is clearly ready for school and her magic training for the day. She looks at you and sort of crosses her arms and leans against the doorway and says, "Are you really going with Mother? Or are you just going to run away? Again?"
"Why do you always do this?"
"Why do I always do what?"
"Come in here and talk down to me."
"I'm not talking down to you. I'm asking if you are planning on leaving again."
"What does it matter?"
"It matters because it upsets Mother sometimes. But I will not stop you, and I won't try and interfere. I just wanted to ask."
"Why?"
She gives you this look with this sort of sadness in her eyes, and she doesn't say a word. She just walks out of the room. What do you do?
So he gets dressed.
In his fancy clothes.
And yeah, and then he goes out the back door. Like, he avoids his mother and just, he leaves.
So you sneak out of the house. Yeah. I'm not gonna have you roll for this, just because I feel like you've done this enough.
Not gonna stealth roll?
Nah, not in this case. So when you sneak out of the house, if you want to roll a stealth roll,
it's fine. Keep going.
So when you leave the house, where are you going?
That is a good question. I don't know. I think he would just walk around town for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe like see who what of his friends are around or get some food.
Do you and your friends have any sort of, like, meeting place or anything? Or, hideout or anything?
Yes, sure. we have, there's a cafe that all of us go to often.
Mm-hmm. So more of just, like, a casual meeting place, then?
Yeah, not like a super secret hideout.
Hey, I have to ask.
Yeah, no, it's cool.
You never know. You guys have been here for 2 years.
Yeah.
So, you... Are you going to just grab some food from the cafe, or are you going to try and grab some food from, like, a stall or something?
No, we just grab food at the place, at the cafe.
Alright. So, you head over to the cafe. And walking in, you can see that Annalise and Dante are both already at a table. Annalise is a human bard. They have shoulder-length blonde hair. They wear a tunic and trousers, both which are tailored to a relaxed fit. And they don't have any instruments on them. You know this because they are actually a singer. They seem quite happy and are holding hands with Dante across the table. Dante is a dwarf fighter. He's 21, but he has a large, bushy beard and sideburns already. He's a stout man with strong eyes, and he wears leather armor on top of his blue tunic at all times. he has an axe with him on his side that he keeps sheathed, I guess, when he doesn't need it. He seems very calm and happy, and he is also staring right back at Annalise and holding their hand. So you go up to the counter, and you can buy some food. It's just going to be like 2 copper pieces. I'm not going to RP this whole thing out.
Yeah.
You buy some food.
It's just, okay, here's 2 copper. Yeah. Great.
Yeah. And then you can head to your table.
Great. So Elsie would walk up to the table, put his food down, and with the look of absolute disgust, just say, "Ugh, you know, people should be arrested for PDA."
Without even looking at you, Annalise says, "You're just jealous."
Maybe a little.
Layla then let go of Dante's hand and sort of nudge you with their elbow.
Whatever.
It's okay. We'll find you someone.
Whatever. And he sits down and starts eating his food.
Dante looks at you and says, "So you're not going to the treatment this morning, then?"
"Nah. I'll go later. Maybe."
"Okay. So, what's the plan for the day, then?"
"I don't know. What do you guys want to do?"
Annalise sort of shrugs, and Dante shrugs. Annalise says, "I figured that we would all just hang out here until something better came up."
"So what we do every day?"
"Yes." They nod and give you a giant smile. "So, is there anything you want to do here?"
"I mean, not particularly. I don't know. Like, I don't know where, like, what's around or what we could be doing, you know?"
"Mm-hmm. Well, what are you looking to do? Because you're in, like, a cafe in the middle of town. So there's, like, the whole rest of town around you."
"I have no idea."
"All right.
I'm sorry."
"It's all right. I just wanted to ask."
"Yeah."
While you're all sitting there, Dante sort of leans forward and looks at you. "So, how much money have you saved up for the trip?"
"Enough."
"You know how we need about 10 gold pieces for each of us to keep us all safe for a while. Do you have that much?"
"I have more than that. We've already talked about this."
He rolls his eyes. "Of course you do. So it's just me and Annalise who are still saving up, then."
I have enough to spot you guys. You know that."
Annalise looks at you. "We just wouldn't feel comfortable taking it. It's your money, you've earned it. So we too need to get our act together and get the money together."
"If you guys can't do it, I can help you. I really want to do this. It's important to me. So if you can't, just tell me and I'll give you what you need."
Annalise puts their hand on yours and says, "Elsie, we want to go too. It's boring here. We want to see the rest of the world. Okay? We just want to make sure that when we go, we're all doing equal work."
"Exactly. So, if I have to spot you to begin with and you pay me back, it's great. It's fine."
"But if we all have the money to start out with, it'll be more even. You'll be able to spend money on yourself for whatever you need. Don't worry, we'll be ready soon. We'll have the money together."
"Yeah.
How about this? By your 18th birthday, we'll be gone."
"You promise?"
They hold their hand out to you and like to shake and says, "Promise."
Elsie puts his hand out, but instead of shaking it, he slaps her hand. "I'm holding you to that."
They nod, and Dante also nods. And you guys enjoy the rest of your afternoon in the cafe. So it's like an hour or two later when you see a familiar face enter the cafe, which we haven't named, and that's fine. Because Simon enters. Simon is a young halfling who you've sort of taken under your wing. He has very messy brown hair, and he wears these pretty plain clothes. He's very nondescript, to be completely honest, but the one thing that stands out about him is this big, goofy grin that he always wears, no matter where he goes. And he shows up, and he sits down at your table and says, "So what's the plan, mister? What are we doing today?"
"Hey, buddy. Today's just a relaxing kind of day."
"Hmm. Well, could you teach me a card trick then?"
"Sure." And Elsie pulls out his deck of cards, which obviously is not like a normal deck of cards. Because
you're a cheater.
Because he's a cheater. So he pulls out a deck of cards and he starts shuffling them. And then he just does like a very simple like sleight of hand card trick. Mm-hmm. And yeah.
Okay. I'm actually gonna roll to see how Simon does in mimicking this.
I don't have to roll to see how good of a trick it is. Cool.
Not now. If you're trying to actually use it on someone, I'd make you roll. But cool. Right now, you're just teaching a little child.
Good to know.
Ooh, that is a bad roll.
Yikes.
So, you show Simon this trick. This, like, simple trick that you've done, like, 1,000 times. And Simon, when he tries to replicate it, just completely fails. Like, you can clearly see him, like, taking the card and putting it in his sleeve and then trying to continue. Like, it's very, very obvious.
What did he roll?
He rolled a 7.
Oh, that's not that bad. That's rude.
But it's bad.
But it's bad.
So, you see this, and Simon just looks very proud of himself.
Good job, man.
I did it right, didn't I, mister?
You did it. You definitely did it right. Let's let's keep practicing though, and then you'll get better. And yeah, Elsie just does not know what to say to him. He's just like,
Simon doesn't pick up on it. I'm going to roll 3 more times and see if he improves.
And see if he gets better.
Okay, so by the end of it, he's actually pretty good at it. There's a point where you two actually... Roll me a perception check on this one.
What's my perception bonus? Plus 1, 13.
Okay, so there's one time that you do this trick at the very end that you're sort of playing a game of like poker or something, and the goal is to get as many cards in your sleeve as you can, and you catch him like once or twice, but by the end of the game you ask him to show you how many cards he has in his sleeve, and he has about 8 in his sleeve. He rolled a natural 20 at the very
end. Right. Okay. Oh, yeah. All right then. Good job. I'm very impressed.
See, Mister, I told you I could do it.
Very, very impressed. Except I saw 6 of them. But, you know, you got me on the 2.
You see his look sort of drop and then he says, "But I did get you on 2.
But you did get me on 2.
So, after all of this, after you sort of show Simon this trick and you see how he does and everything, Simon sort of looks at you and says, "Do you want to go to town and get some food?"
"Sure."
"All right." And he hops up out of the chair and begins making his way towards the door. Annalise and Dante are sort of talking between themselves and they give you a wave bye. They just got food, so they aren't coming with you guys.
Okay.
As you two are going through town, I want you to roll me a
d20. Just a flat d20?
Yep, just a flat d20.
18.
Okay, so as you are walking through town, you see a familiar face.
Another familiar face.
Yes, another familiar face. You see Keeper Nazah. She is a female half-elf who works in the temple with your mother. She is a paladin of mud. She's an older elf, looks to be in her, older half-elf looks to be in her, like, late 50s or so. The way she holds herself, though, clearly tells you that her age is not something to take for granted. She'll probably kick your butt if you try and fight her. So the name Keeper isn't actually a name, it's a title. You know that this ranks her as a high member of the temple and, like, the sort of religious organization of the world. She's, her relationship with you, she's not really close with you, but she knows about your situation. She doesn't really, she's had a few talks with your mother about her being a little overbearing, and she's never been the one to sort of rat you out, but she definitely sees you while you're walking around.
Does she, like, it, do I see her from a distance? Is it, like, am I passing her?
It's like you're passing her, sort of thing.
Oh, okay. Then Elsie would smile and wave at her.
Keeper Nazah looks at you and says, skipping your treatment again today, aren't we?
Just wasn't feeling it today.
Well, you know I'm not one to stop you, but, your mother has already torn her way through the temple a few times, just so you know. What have you been doing all day, if I may ask?
I've just been around. Not doing much of anything.
Well, that's fine. Tell me, Elsie, have you learned anything interesting over the past few weeks? I know that you're quite the knowledgeable fellow in the town.
Maybe, maybe not. What's it to you?
I just wish to know more about the people of the town. You see, there are many who come to our church, but many who come to the temple, but many who also don't.
Is there anyone specific you're looking for information on?
Well, there's a woman who runs an orphanage in the town and spends a lot of time with the children.
Evie?
I've noticed that... Yes, Evie. I've noticed that most of those children aren't very religious, and I was wondering if there's a reason for this. Perhaps she doesn't believe in the temple and the gods, or perhaps she was harmed by them in some way. I just... wondering if you have any sort of information like that.
I don't know necessarily why they wouldn't be religious, but I do know a little bit about this Evie.
And what can you tell me?
What can you give me?
Okay. You ask her what she can give you, and she sort of gives you this pensive look. And she says, I can give you information on Veronica.
My sister.
Yes.
What information could you possibly give me on my sister?
Something that I don't think you know.
What wouldn't I know?
Veronica has taken on a job. She's no longer going to school.
She had her backpack on this morning, her books.
She's not going to school anymore. She's already started as an apprentice down at the Mage Society. Because your family needs the extra money.
The point of this was so that we didn't need the money. The reason that we're here. Elsie just takes a breath and looks away.
She looks at you and says, your treatments are expensive, Elsie. You know this. Your mother has been doing extra experiments to try and sort of make a form of treatment that is portable. They need the extra money for that.
Elsie just kind of looks at the ground, looks back up at the keeper, and says, how much do they need?
I don't know. Your mother hasn't told me. Elsie, I want you to know that I was mainly joking about you giving me information, but I hope you find something to do with this information.
The only thing I know about your Miss Evie is she was a commander in the Carthage Empire's army before she came here. What you do with this is what you do, but that's what I know. I'm sorry if that wasn't what you were looking for.
She gives you a nod and says, no, that's fine. I mean, it's interesting to know, at least. Gives me a reason to talk to her. She holds out a hand to you. I will be seeing you then.
Thank you. And he holds his hand back out to her.
All right. And you guys shake. Unless you slap her hand also.
No, I do not slap her hand also.
After hearing this information and hearing what you heard from the Keeper, what do you do next?
I'm still with Simon, right?
Yep, you're still with Simon. He sort of wasn't paying attention. He was looking at food stalls and stuff while this conversation was happening.
Yeah, okay. So I would still get lunch with Simon. Mm-hmm. So do we want to go through that? Or
no.
No, not really.
Another, like, 2 copper.
I don't know. I think Elsie would try to find Veronica.
Okay. So you go to the northern side of town, where you know there is this mage training facility where they also allow for apprenticeships, which are paid apprenticeships, that sort of stuff. You head there, and it is this large stone building. Think, like, sort of college campus building, like old buildings. It looks like it's made mostly of stone, but it's been burned, and there are weird effects that seem to have happened because of all the training that these young wizards and mages go through. As you approach, you actually see your sister leaving the front doors.
Is there like a path, like the front doors, and there's a path that she's walking down?
Yeah, there's a path that she'd walk down.
Elsie would dramatically wait at the end of the path.
Alright. She gets there and sees you and says, well, what's you doing here?
School day over already?
No, I'm going for lunch. Do you want to come with?
Sure.
Alright. I was going to head to the stalls by the south. Try and get some kebab, maybe, is what I was thinking.
Okay. He would follow her.
So you guys start heading south. Any reason you are coming to pay me a visit?
I heard something. I heard that you were no longer going to classes.
Roll me a insight when you say that.
14 plus, where's insight? Insight, 17.
17. So, with a 17, you are watching her as you say this. You know that, you know how to read people very well. And you notice that she clenches her fist very slightly when you say that. I have no idea what you're talking about. That is clearly a rumor.
Is it?
Yes, of course.
You can't lie to me, and you know that.
Who told you?
It doesn't matter.
So, what are you going to do?
I'm not going to do anything. You should go back to classes. You're good.
I don't need them. I just need my magic.
But the classes will help you get better. The classes...
Those things teach me about taxes and the world and boring things. I want to learn magic. And it works. It's fine.
Who are you working for?
I'm working as an apprentice in the tower. I'm sort of helping with experiments and other things. They're researching things about the rifts and the voids. And she looks up at the 2 rifts that are above Regan, / right within a mile radius of Regan. Do you look up with her?
Yeah.
I haven't had... Okay. So when you look up, you can see that there are, once again, 2 rifts above Regan. They're within a mile radius Looking at these rifts, they're like tears in the sky. Imagine a solar eclipse, but in the shape of a tear. And on the very edges, they emit different colored light. One of these emits a light purple light, a light blue light, I mean, and the other one emits this dark purple light. They're both slightly north of the city. She says, it's important to research these things and figure out what happened here. Why they exist.
How does that help you with magic?
Well, I'm learning new magic. I'm learning abjuration magic and other sorts of things. Things that I didn't know previously.
And is this what you want to do? Or what you have to do?
She pauses. It's what I need to do.
You shouldn't do things out of other people's necessity, Veronica. We'll figure it out.
She stops walking. And waits for you to finish speaking. Sorry.
No, it's okay. You're incredibly intelligent. And you're gonna go very, very far if you keep up with what you're doing. Not this riff nonsense.
She gets into a sort of... She crosses her arms in a very sort of protective stance. And what about you? Well, I'm just supposed to do whatever I want to not care.
I didn't say that.
Mother asked me for help, and I'm going to help. If you have a portable treatment, then we can go places. We can see the cities. We can come back. We can be somewhere else. If we find a way to make the treatments portable, then maybe we can go see Rhys.
If Rhys wanted to see us, he would have come. If Rhys wanted anything to do with us, he would have come. He is an adult. He made his decision. Stop living your life for other people.
After you say this, you can see that there are tears in her eyes. She's very shaken by this. And she sort of wipes them away and looks at you and says, and what will happen if you don't get your treatments on time? If you keep skipping them, then it will just be me and Mother, and it will have been for naught. We already lost Dad, and we lost Rhys. Am I supposed to lose you too, Brother? You ask me why I talk down to you, but I don't talk down to you. I just want you to be here.
If I promise to stop skipping my treatments, do you promise to go back to school? I will work. I will make money, and I will give it to Mother for this research, for whatever treatment she is trying to do, for whatever experiment she is trying to do, I will do that. But you need to go to school. You need to learn from people who actually know what they're talking about, not these people who are researching rifts that are inexplainable, that are nothing.
She nods and very quietly says, okay, as long as you promise me you will go to your treatments.
I will.
You swear.
I have never lied to you, and I do not plan on starting now.
She runs up to you and gives you a hug.
Elsie does that, oh my god, why are you hugging me type thing? Mm-hmm. He's really surprised that she's just doing that in public, and then he gives her a really big hug back.
So, after that, Veronica heads off to go actually get a meal, and then she says she'll head back to the mage area and let them know. But she tells you that you need to go for your treatment while she's doing this.
Elsie would say, fine, I will go. And says goodbye, and then just heads to the temple for his treatment.
All right. So you head to the temple. The temple is this enormous marble building. It doesn't sit on top of any stairs or anything, but it's very imposing. It has two large dark wooden doors that are engraved with the symbol of the Pantheon, which is this four-pointed star. Walking in, you can see the different areas dedicated to the four deities of creation, along with minor alcoves dedicated to their secondary aspects. You walk through and you also see the statue of the Pantheon, this 10-armed creature with a face that is just the four-pointed star. And you just walk past all of this. I don't think you're... From what you've told me, I don't think Elsie's very religious in any sort of way.
No, he is not.
Alright. So you just sort of walk right through here and head past that statue.
I mean, he admires, like, the work of the gods, I guess, especially because his mother is a cleric, but he's not, like, he doesn't really care for the gods all that much.
Alright, so you head through, and you go down to the medical wing of the temple. It's this entire area that's dedicated just to medicine and healing within the temple. It's one of the largest areas here. And you can see your mother is treating someone else, but she seems very stressed. The bun that she makes every morning for her hair is just a complete mess. It looks like she's been pulling it down and trying to repin it, but she seems very frazzled. What do you want to do?
She's with a patient, you said?
Yes. Yeah, she's with another patient right now.
I would kind of stay back and just wait until she notices me. And then just kind of, like, give a sheepish smile and wave.
So she finishes her treatment with this patient, gets up from kneeling next to the patient, and heads over, turns around and actually sees you. And as she looks at you, you can see this relief just run through her entire body. This sort of heavy sigh. And she approaches you. Elsie, you've been gone for so long. Let's go, your treatment's late. Come on.
It was only a couple hours.
Yes, a couple hours where you were supposed to be resting.
All I do is rest. I did rest. I rested in a cafe instead of in the temple.
You know, last week you had the cough. You were coughing. And that's a bad sign. And we need to make sure that you stay healthy.
I'm healthy this week. Last week was last week.
But we need to make sure that it stays healthy.
Yes.
And she brings you to one of the personal rooms that are in the medical wing. It's very cold in this room. It's made of wood versus the marble of the previous rooms, but it's cold, kind of like how hospitals are. And your mother sits you on the bed and she looks at you and says, I will be right back. I need to grab materials. And she leaves the room to go grab the herbs and everything that she uses with this ritual. And then your mother returns. She has two arms full of herbs and poultices and other things that she needs to make sure that this treatment works. And she looks at you and says, are you ready?
I'm always ready.
Okay, lay down.
He lays down.
Your mother begins this treatment, and you've done this hundreds of times, and it's never quite something you're ready for. Your mother is a cleric of fire, and this ritual involves fire. She takes these poultices and herbs and mixes them and infuses them with magic from fire magic that only lasts a short while, and then she gives it to you to drink while applying some of it to your body. The reason why you never are really ready for this is because what she gives you to drink burns you from the inside out. It is liquid flame that is designed to kill this illness, but it takes quite the toll on your body. How do you react when this happens? When you drink this liquid and feel this flame?
I don't know, I guess LC kind of... So he's gotten used to it. Not that it's like, oh yeah, burning from the inside out. Big awesome. But he knows what's coming. So he always just braces himself and he just gets really tense and he closes his eyes. And like as it goes down, he just kind of like curls up and waits for it to stop.
I think that's actually where we're gonna end this episode. We see the scene of your mother treating you, and we watch as you curl up onto yourself as this fire burns you from the inside out.
Hi friends, this is Ollie and I voice Vayu. We just wanted to thank you all for downloading and listening to the second backstory episode of Prison Pals. If you enjoyed this episode, please continue to download and listen to our episodes. We really appreciate your support. You can also follow us on Twitter at Prison Pals, on Instagram at Prism_Pals, like us on Facebook at Prison Pals Podcast, and you'll be able to find transcriptions of every episode on Tumblr at www.prisonpals.tumblr.com. We'd like to thank Neil Martin for his awesome song that he wrote as our opening music. It's also like a little snippet that we put as the closing music. He's really great. You can find him on Twitter at Bardic Martin. We'd also really like to thank Sam, our very own, who plays Gibbs, for all the awesome artwork that they do. They made the logo, all the official artwork that you see on Twitter. Yeah. I think that's about it. Please leave us reviews on iTunes, and remember to tell your friends. Word of mouth is really important, because we don't really advertise the show. I mean, we, like, post stuff on social media, but that's different. So be sure to share us with friends and family. Alright, that's about it for me. So, thanks again. Love you. Bye!